Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful day, having a wonderful week. You know the score. Podcast time, and this week it is the one and only Beck. Beck is British DJ producer based out of Berlin. She's recently released on We Are The Brave, which is Alan Fitzpatrick label. The track is called Marimba. Go check that out. After we've had this conversation, I really enjoyed this conversation. It was the first time kind of meeting her, talking to her. We spoke about all things music, the future of music, and kind of how she likes to tour and where she tours and things like that. So, without further ado, Beck, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm in the UK right now, and it looks like it's going to hammer it down. Looking out the window, but it's all good. What about you? Where are you in the world?
I'm in Berlin, but as you can tell, I'm English as well. I was literally just over there actually as well, but came back to Berlin on Saturday.
I was going
to
say the accent is definitely English, but I didn't know if it was like from England or not. There's like there's a tinge of something else in there. If I'm not wrong.
There's not, but I've just lived abroad for 6 years now, okay. So I think I've got one of those accents that just pick up on other people. Other people's accents. So.
Makes sense. How long you been in Berlin?
6 years.
Oh wow, a long time.
It's a long time, and a lot of my friends are just from all over here, so yeah. It just. Starts to twinge a bit.
I feel that. What made you go out there in the first place?
Well, it's definitely the music scene, really. And also I used to work as like a graphic designer in advertising agencies in London.
Yeah.
And I was just so ready for a change. I also lived in London for 6 years. Mm. And then, you know, I got into music quite seriously and thought I really needed a change. So I just took the opportunity and came over back then.
Nice. Did it really like change your whole kind of like perspective on the music, or were you into what you were into before you went to London, like genre wise and or did Berlin just like really kind of like make it what you are today?
I think I was kind of already heading in this direction. Like this was my kind of sound, the techno that you hear over here more, but I it's kind of, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's, I think it's the electronic music capital of the world right now. So it was just also like, okay, if I'm serious about this as a career, I'm gonna like be there and be in the thick of it. And like London has also like a ton of good music and it's an amazing city, but for me it's more like mixed genre wise. And over here in Berlin, like, it's mainly techno that's like the main genre, and everyone's here, so it just makes it easier to meet people and be in a central space.
Yeah, it always seems like there's like a really nice community when you're in Berlin compared to most other places in the world in electronic dance music. Like, there's so many studio spaces as well, there's so many venues, and it's always just like, it's a really nice, it's very community based, I guess. Really, every time I go there, it's just like, this is really nice because everyone is here. Whereas London's very different to that, England's very different to that. I find England, I don't know, it might have been different for your experience, but I find England quite cliquey and different in the music industry. It's like you have to be with a crew.
Yeah, I kind of feel it's like that here as well, but there's so many different kind of crews that you're bound to kind of fall into one of them, whereas in London, I do understand what you mean. It's either like this or like that. And yeah, I'm actually speaking to you today from Riverside Studios. I have a studio here, and it's really nice because there's like, I don't know how many, but like 30 people or even more, 30 studios and probably 60 people that are part of this community. And it's really nice to get inspired and stay connected with everyone here as well. So that's what I do. Obviously know of some places in London where, and in England where they have big studio communities, but I guess I just, like, Berlin was exciting to me and I wanted to kind of like use this as my next stepping stone in my life and career, I guess.
No, that makes complete sense. How did the whole music thing start for you, from being in London working kind of in advertising and everything like that? Like, what, why techno?
I've always been into electronic music and collected it since a young age. Like, before I actually started DJing, I already had a collection of like 10,000 tracks, and I was like super music geek, into, you know, knowing every track ID, like being at every party, like listening to how the DJ was mixing. And I never really thought of doing it myself until a friend suggested to me, like, hey, you really have a passion for this, and you, so far without even doing it, you've got like knowledge of a lot of the music, so why don't you just start? And and then I started and I kind of never stopped. So it was, it just, as a lot of people do, you start to go down that path and then realize how much you love it and want to make it kind of your whole life. So,
Do you see yourself leaving Berlin or just like staying there forever?
So I did leave a year and a half ago now, 2 years ago now. I left for a year and a half and then I ended up, I ended up coming back. I moved back to England for 6 months and I moved to Ibiza.
Okay.
I thought I would kind of want the nature in Ibiza and then the like hustle and bustle of London the rest of the time. Yeah. But I didn't really like it that much. I just missed Berlin. Yeah. I think like I can always go on holiday to Ibiza or go stay with friends there. And with London, I've got loads of friends and family there. So I can always go back when I want. But Berlin is I miss the base here and how easy and convenient the city is as well.
Yeah. And you can pretty much travel from anywhere in the world there as well. It's like the airports are pretty good.
Yeah.
I want to talk about kind of the like process of writing music on like when you started. Were you like, how long did it take you to get to the point where you're at today, to like where you're happy to write music? Because I think that kind of gets forgotten about, on especially nowadays. There's so many people that are producing, and how long it actually takes to write something good until you're at the point where you're happy, or even if you're not happy. Because like, even for me, like when I release music, sometimes it's like a year later I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't release that. What's your kind of, how long has it taken for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's been probably like 3 years it took.
Wow, that's short.
Do you think? I thought that was amazing. Quite long.
Because yeah, that's amazing.
I came from kind of nothing into, I mean, I had, back when I was a child and like teenager growing up, I played piano, played guitar, so a bit of musical knowledge, but it seemed to have just like all being forgotten when I started to, to make electronic music. I did a short course where I was studying in the evenings for 6 months after work. And then when I moved over to Berlin, I really just decided to just like put in as much time as I could myself. And there was a bit of a there was definitely getting over the hurdle moment where everything started to make sense. And I started to, be able to write myself like fully and not like also use reference tracks or like listen to how other people had done it. There became a moment where you can just kind of flow and really just like, I think it's also about trusting yourself as well.
Yeah.
You don't have to follow all the rules in the book. I found that in the beginning, a lot of the like finite mixing knowledge I kind of don't really use that much. I just am like, does this sound good? If there's a big problem, obviously, with frequencies clashing or something more technical up, then I will fix that at a later date if it needs fixing. But it's just kind of about trusting myself at one point, and I think that was about 3 years in. And if I listen back to my first releases, of course I'm like, oh wow, this is quite basic, but at the time I thought it was amazing. But I don't regret any of the releases I've put out, and I think that it's good not to. It's a landmark of like where you were at that moment.
Yeah,
I think it's amazing to see the progression. So I think it's like, it's quite, even if you put it out technically not a great release, it's kind of like, well, 2 years later I can recognize that that's awful. So that's I've progressed.
I like that mindset, because I regret releasing a lot of music. But I think, for me, it took me years. I've been writing for like 15 years. And I think it was only up until like maybe 2 years ago, I was like, I've like got to where I feel like I can always progress from it, but I'm like super happy with what I'm putting out. But I don't know, maybe that was for me because I was just trying to fit in and like copying fashions and stuff like that. Or maybe it's weird.
It's
definitely weird. How did you, when you like released your first release, can you remember what label that was on?
Yeah, it was on Second State. Which was also part of how and why I moved over here, because I met Panpot and they were just starting the label at the time. And they said, you know, if you're ever in Berlin, come see us at the office. Yeah. And I just really took that opportunity as well. And I've had, they've always supported me throughout my career, which has been really cool. But I think, you know, I also came from a background where, like, going back to your point on how long it takes people to kind of get to a state of release-ready music. Yeah. Well, I was trained in Photoshop and like other computer programs, right? So also when I was transferring these skills into Ableton, which is what I use, it was just a matter of like learning a new program.
Yeah, totally.
Because I'm a bit of a geek like that, I guess, not your stereotypical like person that you see right here. So, but yeah, no, that was all part of the move. And that was the first label I released on. Yeah.
That's amazing. How long did it take for you to be like full-time in music, if you are full-time in music? Like what was the point where you got to like, okay, well, this is, I just don't have time to do anything else?
That was only about 1 year before the pandemic, actually. Which really sucked.
I bet
I had like honestly my busiest period, which luckily and thankfully took off when things resumed in the this summer just gone. But yeah, it was kind of only about a year before, but yeah. I also enjoyed doing a bit of both. So I was doing some freelance design work, but more kind of app or website designs. So yeah. It's still something I enjoy, when I wanted to / when I needed to, you know, when gigs were a bit more quiet. It's a perfect flexibility because I could take on a project for a couple of weeks or a month or even 3 or more months if I needed to. So I was in the fortunate position to not have to get a full-time job and still do something I kind of liked. Because I think with music, of course, it's probably one of the most competitive industries in the world, along with things like fashion and like art. So I think there is, yeah, like a lot that's needed to get yourself to the point where you can actually like live off the money. But yeah, it was an incredible feeling when I could do that and just really focus then on music. But then sometimes I was like, oh, I think 5 days in the week in the studio is definitely too much.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. But then there's a lot of other areas that you need to focus on, social media, the list goes on.
How do you find that coming from like a design kind of point of view, where obviously you've got the eye for design and it kind of correlates with social media and kind of branding and things like that? Did you find it easy to kind of coming into that world?
No, not at all. It's still like my least favorite part of what I do. I don't find, to be honest, like social media easy or natural. I think some people clearly do and they do very well at it, but I think it's quite a difficult thing to, you basically have to be your most authentic self and be super vulnerable in front of a load of people you don't know. And the more effectively you do that and you're confident and you're yourself, I guess the more people connect with it and like it. But it's about finding how you feel comfortable to do that on a regular basis. It's such a difficult thing because if you've had other things in your life going on, the last thing that I want to do actually is post on Instagram, and that kind of gets put to one side until I feel I'm actually like, okay, I feel like I'm in the headspace where I can think about what I want to share with everyone else, let alone what I've been doing or processing myself. So I really like hats off to people that do that successfully all the time, because it's kind of insane the energy and space needed for that.
It's a full-time job. It's something for me that I've never really struggled with social media, and I'm lucky that I haven't, because it's just like, I don't know, it just seems to come naturally to me. But on many occasions I'm like, fuck me, this is hard work. This is a full-time job, like dealing with what I need to put up on here. Or and like with like the newer platforms like TikTok coming up, and it makes me feel like an old man, because I'm just like, I don't know what to do, and I know I need to do it if I want to kind of keep going or keep growing like social medias. But for me, is like it's kind of going back to what you were saying about you still really enjoying the design work and you enjoying music. It's like, I enjoy doing Instagram, but I don't enjoy doing TikTok, and I don't enjoy dealing with Facebook and things like that. So if I can do the things that I enjoy, it makes it all a whole lot easier. But I can't force it at all.
Yeah, it can't be forced. And then when you do force it, it's kind of not like vibing with everyone else.
No one gives a fuck. They're like, they can tell. Like, you can tell if something's fake. You can tell I think the thing that really weirds me out on social media is that you could talk about, like, everyone's following you because they like your music. I'd like to hope that most people that follow you and I, they know our music, right?
Yeah.
The minute you talk about your music, no one really gives a fuck. The minute you talk about, like, your dog or something like that, everyone, like, loves it and is, like, fully into it. And that's just something that I just do not understand.
As you're saying it now, it gives me another, like, idea that maybe it's because all these people, like you say, they know your music, right? And they're like able to just listen to that online. But what they give them a sneak into is your life apart from that. True. So if you have a cute dog, or obviously the people admire your music, so they want to know more about you as a person. And
yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah,
I guess that makes sense. It's still weird.
Cause, yeah, I agree.
Because
yeah.
I would love to like have seen, because we grew up without social media. I don't know like how old you are, but I grew up without social media. I remember when like MySpace kind of started, and then it moved to Facebook, and then Twitter, and then Instagram. But it was such a different time before that. And it kind of felt so like the DJ was almost like a mystery, and also wasn't that important. It was like the DJ was just the person that played the music, and there weren't really, it didn't really matter to a certain extent. Like people were into DJs, but it just wasn't the cool thing to do. Now it's like the cool thing to do.
Yeah. No, I'm totally there on that. I was probably around the same time as you. I remember MySpace coming up. And it's also like, if you remember that, it's probably good to keep in mind that all the platforms we currently have will also go out one day. Like, yeah. Especially when, I mean, because I was in the web industry more, you know, there's a big revolution coming of the web 3.0, which is meant to bypass platforms, right, and give people ownership of their stuff. So I think also in terms of social media, we might be at a really big shift in the next year or two, and maybe some platforms will disappear, maybe even Spotify will. They've just I kind of regard Spotify as a social media platform, I guess, but Spotify have just had to like invest $100 million in defense to try and figure out how to stay above ground and keep people using a platform where in a few years, like, web 3.0 will mean that, you know, with NFTs, and people will basically have ownership of their music a lot more and of everything they use online. Because right now we're just giving our data out to everyone without even thinking. And this is why, countries such as China actually way ahead of us in terms of like stopping to use these big platforms already, although I think they have others that they now use. But I think that it's just good to keep in mind that whatever we're using now is not going to be there it's not likely to be there for forever. So
I think that's super important as well to say, because I think we all forget that, because a lot of us are just kind of living day to day. But if we look at the past of what's happened, so much change has happened in the last 15 years, 10 years. What's your whole thoughts on Web 3.0? Because I'm like really trying to get into it now. I'm like really trying to get my head around it and try and work it out. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm only just really getting seriously into like learning more about it, because I've just had very epiphany kind of moment of like things are going to change. Well, because when Web 2.0 started, this is when, you know, apps were able to be created and a lot of big platforms came in, like Facebook, and sort of initiated this social media wave. And now we're going to be seeing use of the blockchain, and other like companies and platforms are going to, there's going to be new ways to create like stuff online, basically. We essentially won't need the middleman platform.
Yeah.
So it might change even the way that we sell music. Mm-hmm. We might not need to, we might be able to keep more money from our music sales, which would be amazing. I think it's going to give people like rights to their kind of digital property, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think big platforms will have to like really think of ways to enable their users to still have ownership of their stuff and have more giving, like, basically giving back to the people that own the data.
Yeah, it's always amazes me, and like, this is on. I've had this conversation with my manager over the last like 2-3 years, where we're the ones doing the art, we're the ones kind of giving the product, and yet we're the ones that kind of almost get like kind of suffocated from all the data that everyone else is capturing and making money off us, and then also not paying us.
Yeah,
and when
we're like in a lose-lose cycle.
Yeah, and it's like, let's say for instance it takes you, let's just say it takes you a week to write a record, or a month. Okay, a month to write a record, that's 12 records a year. Like, I know that's quite minimal, but use that for example. And then you only release like 4 of those records. Like, we all know that we make fuck all money out of those, out of that music, but how much data do the bigger platforms take from that music that gets used from us? And then how much money do they generate from the data that they're using based on what we are kind of giving them by sending people to their platforms? And it's like, this catch 22 is like, you know how it is when you release a record on Spotify, Apple and things like that. Like, if you don't get playlisted, your record just gets lost in the depths of Spotify and Apple Music. And then you're like, well, we just put this music out. And there's almost really a lot of artists don't even release that often nowadays because it doesn't even matter. It's not about music, which is wild because we're in the music industry.
Yeah, it's changed massively. I kind of wish I was around a bit earlier, to be honest, sometimes.
Well, I think we're in a really interesting time though, because I like what you were saying with NFTs. I don't know if you know the essay Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans. So really, I'll send you a link after. But it's like a really interesting, it's kind of the subscription model, but per artist. So if you have 1,000 fans paying you £10 a month, $10 a month, €10 a month, then you're kind of making a living from your music. Mm. And then if you scale that up, et cetera, et cetera. And that's almost like the same. It's like OnlyFans. It's like Patreon. It's kind of all those types of subscription platforms. However, with the NFTs, with blockchain, it does allow everyone to keep their own data. It does allow every artist to be able to charge what they want to charge. And then it's really just down to the artist to create a community. And that's so important. Communities are so important in dance music, in any art.
Music is, I guess, in the end.
Say that again.
Yeah, that's what music is in the end, I guess. It's like club is almost a community, you know, of certain people, certain like genres, I guess, certain communities. We need to remember that as well, I think.
Do you know what would be amazing as well is if every promoter worked with the artist? This is something that I've been banging on about for a good year or two. Is like, imagine if every promoter gave you the contact details to everybody that bought a ticket to your show.
Yeah.
And like how much you could build a community in each city with the promoter. You work together because of course I don't want to become a promoter for every show of myself. I want to work with people so that everyone does what they do great. But if we had, let's say for instance, I went to LA, did a show in LA and the promoter gave me all the details, all the data that kind of bought tickets. Imagine what I could do with that community. Imagine how like we could build that community by doing a lot of like giveaways or kind of inviting them to certain things and they get special access to certain things. Mm-hmm. Like it would just create so much more community. So many more people would give a fuck about you.
Yeah.
But at the moment, everyone's just kind of seems to be fighting against each other. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense, really.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's. I think the sense of community is really important because it's not just about the music you make necessarily. It's about, like, you know, the music can also have a message. People can create a tour based on, you know, a whole project of music that may feed into. Yeah, like Mode Selector, they do, they have like political messages within their music or whatever they want to address at the time. And then they have everything around that is tied in. And I think getting your community on board with, really following you and really like listening to everything that you're making and putting out is really important. It's going to be more and more important. I think appealing blindly to the masses and having a ton of followers is kind of quality over quantity, I think, will become like necessary when NFTs and you know, when we really take ownership of our music properly, I think community and quality of community rather than quantity of the masses will be definitely really important.
No, I totally agree with that. And I think it's down to us as the artists to actually start creating those communities ourselves, which we all have to a certain extent through social media. But I think it's just, how do we take that away from social media and how do we actually create these people into like true fans, true people that like will literally do everything, like that they will want to support you in every way, or in certain ways. Like some fans will go to every single show, some fans won't go to every single show, but they will listen to your music or they might buy your NFT or they might whatever. I think it's just really important. And I also think it's like, I don't know if you've ever had this where you've played a show somewhere and then you've put a video up of you playing in the show and then like people in the comments are like, wait, I didn't know you were in Berlin tonight playing. And you're like, how the fuck? And it's like, how the fuck did you not know? And the reason why you didn't know is because we're all battling with algorithms and having to put paywalls up to make something happen.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting point. It's quite, it's quite ironic that we're meant to use social media to get the message out to people of when we're in certain places. And then, we're battling against random algorithms that like have become more and more difficult. I think especially on Instagram, it's really hard to get traction these days. And when Reels first came out, there was a sudden boom, tons of views, things going viral, and now they're also really difficult. So it's kind of like you have to jump on trends and like trends within the platforms rather than what everyone else is doing, so to speak. But I think it's like a tough world. There's so many things to think of. Getting true fans that really follow you for your music and getting messages out to them, there must be different ways that we can start to do this.
There has to be. I've got a few meetings coming up that are kind of all based on blockchain and kind of crypto stuff and NFT, and like each time I go somewhere, somebody's talking about it, and I think it's definitely there, and I don't think we're too late. I think a lot of people have said like, oh, you're too late, this is just started. It's like, this is just the kind of tip. It's like we're at the beginning of the mountain.
I think so as well. I think like I think it's just started like a few years ago, but it's not used by the masses yet. But in the next few years, people are going to be adopting all of this stuff and we're going to see huge change again. Like, it's just exponential what's happening and what's happened in the last 5-10 years. So I think there's, it's about staying open to new ideas as an artist and trying new things without being scared of failure and being a bit unique. I think being out the box and not doing what everyone else is doing and creating new ways for your fans to connect with you is really important.
I think that's really important. I think it's it is definitely like not kind of jumping on bandwagons and just sticking to what feels 100% true to you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I'm into it though. But it's also for me, it's like the crazy thing that kind of still blows my mind is like we're still in the music industry and we still have to write music. And that's still the most important thing. It's just like write fucking great music and it will eventually do well.
Yeah, I mean, like I believe in that. And I think that is what the essence of what we love and what our music industry is about. But like, it's difficult. Like, is that actually still true right now?
I don't know. What do you think? Is it?
Well, say you're an incredible producer and every track you put out is like gold. But your social media is like really bad. I don't know. It depends what sort of genre music you do, I guess. If you're really in the underground, that can be fine, because I think like it's not as important to be, you know, really visible on social media. But if you're in slightly more commercial, when I say commercial, I mean the bigger labels, people that are playing, you know, bigger clubs and festivals worldwide, or just different, I guess, to the underground. I have to be careful about how I word all of this. But I think it might be more difficult because, everyone else probably has great social media and amazing marketing and is doing all these other cool, like, things and ways to get their music heard. So I think it's a bit sad, but it's also about you as a person and showing that, like we spoke about earlier, people like to see the cute dog photos. And
we all just need to get Frenchies and just start posting pictures of them. I think that how do you do it? How do you kind of have that balance of creating music and running it as a business? Because it is a business at the end of the day.
Yeah, how do I do that? I have recognized that, like, I myself, I'm not the best when it comes to shooting videos of myself and these kind of things. So now I'm like strategizing on, okay, who is more expert in that I can get to help me, because this is the side where I'm not good and this is not my talent, this is not my passion. So I'm trying to enable myself to focus on the music and where I can, and depending on, you know, how successful I am with gigs at that moment, get other people to help with the other pieces that I maybe don't want to give my energy and time to as much. But music always stays the foreground for me. Like, I love my studio and I'm in here as much as I can. And I'm definitely like, it lifts my mood. And this is, you know, why I do what I do, and to be able to share music with other people. So, yeah, I think where I can, I start to think of other experts that can maybe tell me, or like, not you know, someone that can come to a gig and do a professional video that I can then use on social media, and it's a lot more successful than me just quickly asking someone behind me, oh, can you just film this? Yeah. Which we all know is a nightmare, because you have to be in that split second of capturing that moment, and then whoever you ask might do a terrible job, or suddenly there's someone that walks in front of the camera or something like that.
Well,
I guess that's what I'm doing. When I have a big gig, I'm just ensuring I've got everything I need there to make the most out of it. Yeah,
I think it's important, isn't it? You have to kind of feed the beast, right? And you just have to roll with it, because there's no changing it until something comes up where you can change it. What have you got coming up music wise?
So next year I have signed 2 EPs and 1 compilation so far.
I think this is actually coming out next year, this podcast.
Coming out next year.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So then this year, 2022.
It's coming out now. I'm like, I don't know if I want to leak like that yet, but no, I'm going to be doing, I'm always like on second state. So we'll do another EP there.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on the Drum Code A-Sides compilation, which will be amazing. And then there is a third label, which I don't want to like, it's something different. Yeah. And it's something that I think will be like a really cool, I'm very happy with the music and I'm really happy with the label as well, so I'll leave that one a secret because it's also coming later next year. But yeah, I've got like a ton of other music just kind of sitting there as well, waiting to be like signed and be sent out. That's like another thing, sometimes I'm in here making more music and I'm like, well, maybe I should just try and send some stuff out first. I kind of almost forget to do that part. I'm just like, come in the studio, come on, make another like track or whatever, and then I'm just like, okay, just add that to the hard drive.
No, I feel you. And then you have like a year's worth of music and you haven't got any releases. Would you ever start your own label?
Yes, I actually did, but it's only for my productions right now.
Oh,
so
cool.
I haven't opened it up to other people. It's more just like to have more control over when I want to put music out.
What's it called? What's it called?
It's just called Beck, and it's just my own music. So it was just like a very simple way for me to... It's not really... I mean, I don't regard it like a... label in terms of it wasn't for the purpose to grow it and to invite people and to create showcases, but I would like to do that one day, but I think I would start a second concept that's more focused on like getting others on board and building a community like that.
No, that makes sense. It's there's something about being able to have control over when you're going to release something. It's so much nicer, because sometimes waiting for record labels can be a long wait. It's great though that you have kind of, you're in with the Second State crew. Do you go on tour with the guys?
Yeah, I had done definitely a lot more in the past, but the way that they run the label kind of changed, and I also grew more as well. But I have toured with them a lot and it's been fun. But yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to next year as well for me as well, gigs wise. But let's see what happens with the state of the world, I guess, because it's all kind of dependent on what happens.
Are most of your shows in Europe?
No. I'm regularly in the US.
Oh, really?
We've got Australia and India confirmed next March. So, like, I do have a lot of shows in Europe, mainly in Holland, Italy, and Spain. But Holland, obviously, is completely off the card. So I had quite a few gigs there that were cancelled. Italy is operating at 50% capacity, which means that a lot of promoters aren't bothering. Spain is actually open right now. So I've got a couple of things there, which is amazing. I think it's just... It's kind of luck of the draw of where you have things planned and whether it's open, but
Where in the States do you tour?
So in July I had my second tour there because I've had my visa about 3 years now, but a year and a half of that was pandemic time. So, but yeah, my second tour, which was July, was 4 weeks, and it was just nice. All over. I think I did 14 shows. New York, LA, Philadelphia, like Austin, Miami, lots of places, and I loved it. And I think that will be like probably twice a year happening.
Nice.
Which will be in you. I think you're in the US a lot as well. Is your manager American?
Ryan's American. I live in Detroit most of the time as well.
So I kind of
go back and forth. But I got back a couple of weeks ago for Christmas and all of that.
So you're really based stateside then?
It's weird for me. I tour mostly in America, where like I very rarely tour anywhere. Like I do Australia, Japan, and America, which is like weird. Like a bit in South America, but my plan is to hopefully do more in Europe. Or just do more worldwide generally. It was weird for me because initially, like, I signed to Dirty Bird Records years ago, which kind of gave me a career in America. But the rest of the world kind of doesn't really look at Dirty Bird Records as like a label that they want to book artists from. So then it was just like just before COVID, like 2019, it was more so like me like realigning myself with who I want to kind of be associated with. Then 2020, starting my own label, and now it's only people are kind of finding out that I'm not signed to Dirty Bird and can also don't play that type of music, if that makes sense. Associations are strange because sometimes they're great, which like I love what Dirty Bird did for me. It gave me a career and I'll always be thankful for that. But like, yeah, it's mad what it can sometimes hold you back massively. So fingers crossed we start playing more in Europe. I really want to do more in South America. Have you done much over there?
I have been in Colombia, like mainly actually.
Amazing. How is it?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was over there the first time in 2018 and played for the Baum guys, who are some of the main promoters over there, and just was amazing. So I've been back every year since, sometimes twice a year. And I just love like the feeling of playing. I feel like the crowd like love the music. They're super passionate. I don't know if it's the Latin vibes in them, but it's like always just really some of my favorite sets and favorite times playing is out there.
That's how I feel about Miami, because Miami's not America. It's like the most far away from America as America is. But I just find that it's like mostly because it's the Latin kind of culture there. It's just a proper party, and they party like 24 hours a day. It's just like nonstop.
I agree. But I think, I guess it's might be the reason that you might tour more in the States and stuff is because obviously when you're based in Europe, it's a small area, like to have lots of gigs in lots of different regions. But in the US, I guess it's harder to plan to come over here and have like enough gigs to kind of tie you around the whole.
It's definitely interesting. For me, it's like I'm really lucky that America does what it does for me, and I would never like change that for the world, because it's an amazing market. You can like, it's so big, you can play so many different shows and so many festivals like all year round. I think like I think 2018 I did 115 shows, and I think 10 of them were outside of America.
Well,
so it's like, it's big enough that you can do that. But for me, it's just, I would just love to play in different places. And because America does what it does for me, it doesn't really matter about the finances coming to the tour Europe, where I'm like, I have to have five shows to make it worth my while. I just want to do it. It's just like, I think it's like, it's just that DJ in me where I just want to play in as many different places in the world and kind of experience as many different cultures. And it's not really about making a shit ton of money. It's just about experiencing those places.
Yeah, definitely.
Does that make sense? Which, we're so lucky that we get to do that. It's just like, how many people can say they've been to Colombia every year for the last 4 years? And just like,
yeah, that makes me feel very lucky, actually.
Yeah, we have the best job in the world, 100%. Although we don't necessarily get to see the cities. Do you like to travel with people, or do you tour by yourself?
More and more in the last year or two, I like to be with people. And yeah, I think it makes such a difference, like, to have friends around, or, you know, a tour manager. I haven't had a tour manager yet, but I think next time I go over to South America, or maybe even the US, it's kind of, when you have a lot of gigs like that, it's kind of worth having someone around.
Yeah.
But in terms of, yeah, I love to have friends come around, and then you feel like you can, yeah, connect with, meet new people through your friends, or, you know, if you go to a city and you have a friend there, they'll bring their friends, and then you just, like, have more friends in the end.
Yeah, totally.
And I find myself building, like, worldwide, lots of, like, small pockets of people, which is just really nice to kind of get to know. Yeah, more people, I guess, everywhere, and get to know other cultures and other cities more by local people that live there.
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to have, like, friends all around the world. And, you know, each time you go into a city, like, you're going to meet somebody that you know, and you can have dinner with them or something like that. But I've never travelled with, like, a tour manager, or I've had, like, in America, I have, like, my photographer crew guys, or like my manager might come to like a few shows, but I've never, like, on a specific tour had somebody on every single date, and I don't know how I'd feel about it. I don't know if I'd get annoyed or I'd enjoy it. I think I'd definitely enjoy it.
Well, I think, yeah, for me, it came, the thought came after the last shows I had in South and Central America, just also being a woman.
Yeah, totally.
You know, being in countries where we're not respected in quite the same way, sadly. And just for safety reasons as well. Totally. Like, if anything goes wrong, you've got someone else there who can help you out. Mm. I don't think in terms of being in Europe, or maybe even the US, I would really need or want one.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of,
makes total sense.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's just having somebody from local around there that kind of just knows the city and kind of can just be with you. I remember when I did South America, I did Brazil, and the promoters kind of gave you almost like a tour manager with you, just to like make sure you didn't walk down the wrong alleys or you didn't go into the wrong places of the city. And it's important, especially for being a female, for you. It's like, does that play on your mind a lot?
It doesn't play on my mind a lot, but there have just been a few circumstances where I've felt like, okay, like, I'm not being treated as I would like to be, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that's never happened somewhere in Europe. And I think it's not to be blamed on other cultures, but I think they're just at different stages of equality within the sexes. And yeah, it's just something that I thought of next time. If I go back to these countries and have gigs, I'll probably just, if there's not a friend that can come, that's, you know, that could kind of to keep me company and just be more of a like team, then I would definitely look at getting someone local to help and come. But
I think it's just really important, really, like, in that situation, because the last thing you want to do is something bad to happen, because then it just puts a bit of taste in everyone's mouth, isn't it, and especially yours, and you don't want to have to go through shit like that. the world is amazing sometimes, isn't it? You're just like, why the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it just makes no sense. What's your plans for Christmas? Are you back in the UK?
Christmas, yeah. I'm going back to England next Wednesday and looking forward to it. And then going to Spain, playing for New Year's Eve there, which will be nice. So yeah, I can't wait to be in England though. Like, I have quite a big family, and it's always like real time off. Like, I actually had a gig offer for the 25th in Germany, like
Christmas Day.
Yeah. And what? I was kind of like,
who goes to a club on Christmas Day?
So a lot of countries, actually, really? Like Germany, yeah, it's a big thing because their Christmas Day is actually on the 24th.
Oh,
okay. So 25th for them is like Boxing Day.
Makes sense.
For us. And it's a huge clubbing night. So I actually did it a few years ago. I left very late at night, the last flight I could get, and came back in the morning very early, like first flight I could get kind of thing. But yeah, this time I said no, because I was like, it's too stressful, and I want to be with my family, and I just want to, be with them. And it's just the one time of year where I think everyone just stops and slows down, and it's kind of just about having an amazing lunch and just sitting there all day. And
I think it's so important. I think, like, I don't know about you, but having taken time out, I really struggle. I really hate the feeling of just sitting around doing nothing and just feeling lazy, or even like going on holiday. It's something that I really struggle with. But I think there's like, every year I just make sure Christmas is at home just so I can kind of make myself have time off. Because we all need it. And especially, although COVID was like a lot of time off, it wasn't really. It was a lot of stress for everybody, and a lot of, like, especially in the music industry, it's like working out what the fuck to do. I think it's really important, and it's nice to see family and friends and everything like that around that time.
Yeah.
I've actually got New Year's Eve off as well, which I'm actually really excited about, because I cannot stand New Year's Eve. It's like, it's great to earn money, but it's just my least favorite night. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's because there's so much expectation put on it, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's also like so many people go out that never go out.
Yeah.
And like everything's overpriced for everyone.
Mm.
And it's like, it's not my favorite. But
yeah.
Where are you playing?
It's actually a club in Alicante, so it's like a small place in Spain, but it's called Metro Club, and it looks really good, actually, so I'm looking forward to it. Strangely enough, two of my good friends moved from Berlin to near Valencia, so they're going to come with me, and my sister might also come out with her boyfriend, so we'll have a little crew, and it'll be nice, because I think, there's also nothing worse playing on your own on New Year's Eve as a DJ. A couple of years ago, I was playing a gig in Galactica in Italy with, like, some really, like, other friends that were on the lineup as well, so that was great. But, like, now it's nice to have some friends actually coming with me as well, and celebrating, and have a little, I'll probably stay an extra day, and
No, I think it's really important. Like, just generally, I think it's very easy, right, as DJing around, is like, it's very easy to just kind of get caught up in the whole DJ world and not realize that we're all in these amazing countries and all in these amazing places and cities, and we're there for like 12 hours and leave, sometimes not even that. And sometimes just if you're with somebody, just taking time out and just enjoying time in that place with someone is super important.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like you said earlier, we're so lucky we get to travel. So it's even better if we have like loved ones coming with us and making memories. And
Totally. We've just done pretty much an hour, so let's wrap this motherfucker up. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been really nice to catch up, and lovely to meet you as well.
Yeah, you too.
How can people follow you and listen to your music?
It will be at Listen to Beck on Instagram and SoundCloud, And yeah, Spotify, just search Beck and that will come up. And yeah, thank you. And also probably worth mentioning, the way we got connected was because I've just released on Alan Fitzpatrick's label We Are the Brave, track called Marimba, if anyone wants to like check that out as well.
It's a banger.
So that just came out 2 weeks ago, and it's more of a summary tune that I wrote in the summer of lockdown, the first summer of lockdown, but it's coming out now, which is, you know, you can never time things perfectly sometimes, but it's also kind of nice to give us a bit of a lick of summer feeling.
Yeah. Alan's label's dope. He's such a nice dude as well. And Robin there, she's amazing, and they kind of, the whole like label team that they have there is really, really strong. They're building something interesting, which is nice to see as well.
Yeah, I agree. Lots of cool music coming out there.
Cool, thank you so much. Have a great Christmas, although this is out in the new year, so happy new year as well. But I'm sure we'll be in touch. Keep safe and see you soon.
Bye
mate, thank you. And that's a wrap. Loved it. Hope you enjoyed it. Please go support the podcast by subscribing, sharing it to whoever you think is going to listen to it. Keep safe. Have a great weekend, or have a great week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.